Welcome to the MVC Storefront, Part 13. This is a real-world application building exercise wherein we're building out an e-commerce store using ASP.NET, MVC, and TDD. My name is Rob Connery. I work for Microsoft. My email is robcon@microsoft.com. You can leave me a message there or on this blog. Starting, as always, with your feedback today, I received a great email from Chandramani asking about dependency injection and saying that, you know, if we added a dependency injection container, it might make the solution more flexible. He also mentions that he hasn't seen it in action, which is something that I've heard from a lot of folks that, you know, I've heard of this thing and a lot of people talk about it, but I haven't really seen it. How does it work? Well, I'm going to go into that today. I have a really cool show here with Jeremy Miller, and we're going to do dependency injection, and he is going to show how to set up structure map with the MVC storefront. So I'm very excited about that. But one of the first things I wanted to tackle is, do I actually need it? And, you know, it's a pretty simple answer. And, you know, if you have a small kind of internal application, something you don't think is going to grow very much, or it's a prototype or whatnot, the answer is probably no. Sometimes dependency injection can be overkill. Jeremy goes into this in detail on the Structure Map website, which is right here, and you can see if you scroll down a little bit, he says consider using Structure Map if you, and then he's got a bunch of reasons here. So head over to structuremap.sourceforge.net, read a little bit more if you'd like to know more about what we're going to do today. I happen to know that e-commerce applications will grow crazy, so I am going to implement this into the application. Okay, well, for those of you who don't know what dependency injection is, I've never used it before, it's essentially, it is inversion of control, and it has to deal with the way objects are instantiated and dependencies work in your application. Now, I know that's a little bit of a mouthful, but essentially you can think of it like if you wanted to do logging, for instance, you might go out and get an assembly such as Log4Net. You might use the enterprise application blocks, whatever works for you. You go out, you reference that assembly, and then in the code somewhere, you would structure up a call to that logging component that would do the logging. You'd have to instantiate it, call whatever logging method is required, and then use it. Well, and you can also think of this too with a SQL Server, using like the SQL Data Client and so on to access your code. Well, if you ever go and change your mind, let's say you want to use your favorite data access component or your favorite logging component or whatever, if you ever change your mind and you want to use something else, you've got to go through your code and remove it all and then kind of pull the weeds. That's called tight coupling. So for instance, if we're talking about the SQL Data Client, when you want to remove that, you actually have to go in and you have to remove all the lines that reference anything to do with SQL Data Client. So that is the exact reference or exact explanation of tight coupling. And what dependency injection wants to do is to kind of remove that tight coupling and make your application a lot more nimble. So I just threw a bunch of buzzwords at you and a lot of gobbledygook language. Let's try and think of this a different way. Let's say you're sitting in your office and you're watching my webcast right here and you say, oh my God, I'm falling asleep. I need a coffee. And let's say you really like Starbucks, but sometimes Starbucks just intimidates you because really they speak their own language there. In fact, when you go to order at Starbucks, sometimes you have to reference other websites to figure out exactly how to do that. And I was doing a little research for this webcast, and I have to tell you, I was sort of blown away at all the rules that pertain to Starbucks. I don't go to Starbucks too much, and I'm not one of those people that orders those big long drinks, but anyway, that is the ultimate kind of example of a dependency there, where you need to know so much about the situation you're in order to use it properly. That is extreme tight coupling. So, and you know, you're never really sure what you're going to get back. Even if you do know everything about it, you could go in and you could violate some sort of, some sort of discipline or some sort of rules of conduct, and you won't get your coffee. Well, if you have a buddy, let's say you have dependency injection, where you configure it once, you set it up in one place, and it will know precisely what you want when you want it and how you want it. It'll know that for every time you ask for it. So if you have an application that likes coffee, to kind of use this absurd example and push it to the limit, you just have to set it up once, and every time you ask for it, you get it the way you want. Now, there's a lot more to it, and you're going to see in the video I'm about to show you with Jeremy Miller how you can use Structure Map to enhance your application in so many ways. So I'm going to stop talking. Got a long video in front of us. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, Jeremy Miller has been good enough to join me today in a pair programming session, is what I'd like to call it. Actually, he's just going to be showing me how to use structure map. Jeremy, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for inviting me, Rob.
Well, of course, of course. So I want to touch really quickly on a lot of people who have been downloading the source have probably seen that I plugged in Unity along the way, and I decided that I wanted to try something different. I think for me, the reason why I decided to move with Structure Map instead of Unity, I mean, number one, I was blown away. Chris came on, showed me how to plug in Unity with all of about 10 lines of code, and it worked perfectly. But then, you know, the thing that I didn't add in to the screencast, which I wish I would have captured, was the four or five scenarios that I threw at him, you know, that I thought, in the future, can I do this with Unity? And he said, well, it's things we're working on. I won't go into that for now, but I know in talking to you, you know, the things that you're saying, you know, as the application grows, the need for it, like your idea about doing the configuration setup using Structure Map, sounds great. So I kind of want to go with a little bit more of a mature tool at this point. However, if this was a simple application, I probably would have stuck with Unity. I felt it was pretty appropriate to talk about my switch of mind here. Well, all right. Well, let's get started here. What I've done so far is I have added in the structure map here into the dependencies folder. As you can see, I've got it here next to mock and Phil's route debugger. And so what I'm going to do real quickly is just add this reference in. And where I always do that. And it's something I used to do in Visual Studio, was it 1999 or whatever the first one was? You right-click on the bin folder. I still have that stupid habit. I never know what I'm working in anymore. So, Jeremy, tell me, now that I have structure map set up, why do I need dependency injection? I'm going a little bit backwards with this, but a lot of people haven't used dependency injection and are going to want to know, do I need it, why do I need it, etc. So what do you have to say about that?
Okay, well, all right, so the most obvious usage, and we're going to treat dependency injection strictly as a pattern at first, okay. Right? So let's pretend that this, let's pretend an inversion of control container like structure map doesn't exist okay. Right now. Just strictly thinking of it as in terms of a pattern. I think of it, maybe here's an example I'm trying to use for documentation. You're a guy walking the streets of New York and you're hungry. You want to walk into a restaurant and basically immediately know, I go up to the counter and I order what I want. All right? I don't need to know how the restaurant works. I just need to go in and know that I can start talking to the restaurant. The restaurant itself, it has to have a chef somewhere to cook things for them. But the restaurant can function without knowing how the chef is getting up in the morning and getting his car and coming to work and checking in. That's a little bit of what dependency injection is doing in a way. So think of a dependency injection as, I have a restaurant. Now I'm gonna put a fully functioning cook or a chef into the restaurant that's
like
ready
the,
to go. My restaurant
could be
now.
The soup Nazi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wanted, you know, one day I have a restaurant that works. The restaurant doesn't necessarily need to know how the chef is created, how he's raised, where he comes from. All I just want to do is say, here's your chef. He's ready to go. Let's do restaurant things. Now, as me as a guy walking off the street, I want to walk in and, you know, hopefully go up to the soup Nazi and say, I want my soup.
Well, see,
and everything's there. I don't have
to
know how.
That's an interesting thing, because the soup Nazi is the opposite of dependency injection, where you have to know what mood's this guy in. You know, what's the soup today? And you have to cower before him. And, you know, with dependency injection, you'd have to worry about that, right?
Well, no, actually, that's actually a good example in a way. So the soup Nazi, we could argue, is an example of a really bad API. We have to know a lot about how the soup Nazi works and thinks and
right.
They're able to use him. If you really want to do dependency injection, which you can really just think of as terms of somebody else knows how to build up the dependencies that my class needs. So my class doesn't need to know about all this other stuff. But if you really want to get the maximum out of dependency injection, the things that you're plugging in need to play well-defined contracts. And a simple contract would be, I can walk up to the guy behind the counter and order, and I always know how to order. I don't have to be able to read his moods and shuffle along quietly and not get yelled at by the soup Nazi.
All right, I like it. This is the soup Nazi example. Soup Nazi API. Having all that said, now, with respect to the storefront delicatessen here, you know, there's obviously points that I've talked about before in previous webcasts where, you know, the constructors might be getting a little bit weighty. Well, for instance, Jeremy, the thing I think you and I talked about before this started is, you know, I have this constructor pattern here that right here I'm hard coding this dependency, my cart repository and my catalog repository. I'm hard coding it in the parameterless constructor. That's obviously not a good thing. So this would be one of those places where you'd say, well, I'm using the repository pattern, test-driven development. If you start to see your constructors going awry, would you agree that that is a place that was kind of a smell that you need dependency injection, I guess, to put it properly?
Well, possibly. Oh, this is actually a good example. Some phrasing I stole from a Ruby guy one time. Look at shopping cart controller here, and just think about it for a minute. If I want to pick shopping cart controller off the shelf and use this class in another context, or just exercise it, or put it in a test harness, whatever the case may be, what do I have to bring with me? And just looking at your code here, if I create a shopping cart controller, then I also bring, I have to know about these, the shopping cart, SQL shopping cart repository, SQL catalog repository, and I also bring these other services with me. So not only do I bring those extra classes, but everything it's dependent upon. So one of the most insidious things you can do in your architecture is to bind a piece of functionality to the existence of configuration files, to needing a database setup. You're cutting down on your ability to reuse the system, reuse pieces of the code, and to test it in isolation.
So what you're speaking about right now is the very typical, and it's almost turned into a buzzword, which is unfortunate because buzzwords tend to dilute the meaning. But you hear it all the time: loose coupling. And so people always say, show me this, and right here is the antithesis. It's tight coupling. I'm saying, like, which is what you just said, to rephrase it, is if you want to use the shopping cart controller again, you have to bring along that, and that's a tight coupling, right?
Exactly.
Get that right? Okay.
So
anyway, go on. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No. So it's that issue, and it's kind of an insidious, quiet type of coupling. Calling new on something, you're dependent upon that repository class and everything that's happening in the new, which I would guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, you're probably looking up connection strings and configuration somewhere, and you're touching a database, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, I've hit this in enterprise applications. I've been, you know, the second, third generation of guys to come from behind. And, sorry, let me get my screensaver off, Rob. One of the things that causes serious friction is I need to be able to go in and change an enterprise system, but I can't even get this little piece of code to work, or just to get to where my new piece of code runs, you know, I have to set up a database, I have to get all this configuration set up, and if you're going off of string keys in the configuration, you may have to hunt down in the code and see what strings are necessary, you know, in your app settings and all this other stuff. What if instead we could just say, I want to use a shopping cart controller, and here are the pieces, the other services that it needs. I'll put a simplified stub, or if I'm doing an interaction test, I'll throw a mock in, just to be able to run this thing, to be able to simulate it in testing. There's a bad analogy I like to use, and I'm saying this just to annoy Scott Belwer, but it's the Aerosmith and the Roadies analogy.
Yeah.
You remember years ago there was a Saturday Night Live skit with Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks was the roadie, keeps running in and out and setting things up for them.
Mm-hmm.
Aerosmith is your rock star. They play the instruments, they make the music. That's what they do. Aerosmith does not get there 2 days early and set up all their own equipment and plug things in and do all the electrical wiring. They just show up and rock out. So if you want to think of it the same way, your shopping cart controller has a lot of responsibilities itself to build up all of these dependencies itself. You know, it knows to get this repository, then create this service. This is where a dependency injection or an IOC tool becomes valuable. You're moving a lot of this grunge, roadie, set up the instruments, plug things in work, just over to the side. So your classes can be rockstar.
Okay, so well, let's get to plugging this thing in. So our goal is today is to remove this dependency here at the very least. What do you think about the service classes too? They're sort of part of the application. They're needed. The service classes contain all the logic. Do we need to inject these too, or what do you think?
I definitely would. Now, but here's my question, though.
Sure.
Something I think maybe is a touch smelly. Is your controller class interacting with both of the repositories or only with the services?
Only with the services.
Okay, so you don't need to see the repositories at all. Really kind of noise at this point.
Yep.
Okay. So, and this gets into, I guess, if you want to contrast the provider model to dependency injection tool, StructureMap is going to be able to handle when I ask for the service, it's going to know to put the necessary repositories into it. The repository probably has its own dependencies, and all the way down into a graph of dependencies. The IOC tool is going to take care of that for you, allow you to create composite or to use composition, you know, to build classes that only fulfill one responsibility. The provider model kind of forces you to put everything in one giant class. Doesn't really encourage you to compose your things very well.
I see.
So,
okay, well let's do it. How do I get started doing this?
Okay, so first thing we need to start doing is we need to bootstrap StructureMap. And tell it what to deliver.
Okay.
So in this shopping cart controller, do you want to go ahead and refactor this just
sure.
to add another constructor function?
Sure. Let's do it. I have a feeling that you're going to want to take the repositories or the service classes. Is it in here?
Yeah. That's your direct dependencies.
All right.
We don't even want Shopping Cart Controller to know that there's a repository behind the scenes. We only want it to know that I go to these services and they do things for me. Shopping Cart Controller shouldn't even know how they do their things behind the scenes.
Ooh, this is going to be good. Okay, so let's see. I take that out. Now, do I need to interface my service class at all? I mean, this is an interesting question to me because, you know, I'm so used to seeing IOC containers replace interfaces or inject interface things, but in this case, I'm not going to implement this more than once. This is a single implementation of the catalog service. What do you think on that?
Okay. All right. So you may send hate mail to jeremydmiller@yahoo.com. This is going to get into a mild religious argument.
Okay. It's all right.
I would say that, yeah. You don't have ReSharper installed.
I don't.
Honestly, I don't use Naked VS 2008, but can you do an extract interface refactoring very easily?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead and extract an interface.
Okay.
Reason is, it's frankly just not that expensive to do what Rob's doing here. Half the time you start from an interface, and it doesn't matter to me because a lot of times I'm starting with the interface and I'm creating the interactions with it and then I'll implement it later. If you're starting from the concrete class, you just do this little pull out the interface. You may not want to be replacing it today. You may only want one of these, but what if we want to put a mock object in there?
That's a good point.
Which gets us down the type mock rat hole that I don't want to talk about at all.
Sure.
But even so, even if you had type mock and you don't really care about having another implementation, what if you want to run an acceptance test? What if I want to use, and this is something I do a lot, forget mock objects. I'll write partial stack integrated tests where I'll put a stub in that I can control from the test machinery. Mm-hmm. So I can test even my user interface. I do this more with WinForms and WPF, but I inject a repository in, a stub repository, and then control what data is going to be returned. So I can write automated tests like that for acceptance mm-hmm. tests. If all I really care about is how does my user interface behave. So there's a lot of scenarios that you can take advantage of if you can swap things in. A lot of things that you wouldn't do otherwise mm-hmm. suddenly become mechanically cheap, and you'll find yourself taking advantage of that swappability. Okay, so now we have a shopping cart. We have a shopping cart controller. It has a fat constructor that something else can call.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Okay, so we're using the constructor below it.
Yeah, we're going to be using this one right
now. Okay, so this is a structure map specific thing. So structure map is going to scan the class. We're going to register structure map with this shopping cart controller. But structure map has to figure out which constructor to use. Oh, you don't actually need it here.
Oh.
Now, structure map does need to know which constructor to use. Do you think you can comment out the second constructor? Because that will confuse it. All right, so we have two constructors. The no argument constructor up above, and down below we have the fat greedy, what I would call a greedy constructor, that requires you to stick everything into it. So this is a rule that I stole from Pico Container. That's a much older inversion of control tool in the Java world. Unless you direct it otherwise, and you can control this with an attribute, structure map is going to scan the concrete class, and it's going to look for the constructor with the most arguments, with the assumption that this is the greediest constructor is the one that's most appropriate for the container to use. So we're going to need to configure the shopping cart controller, but we also need to tell it what's the right iShopping cart service and the correct iCatalog service. So we have this chain of dependencies, and the container's going to have to know about all of these, which the cool thing is we get to swap out all of these.
That's cool.
So we need to start doing some configuration.
Okay.
So we're going to configure in my suggestion is to use a Fluent interface. It's eventually going to be called from Global ASAX.
Okay.
But very strong recommendation is let's create a whole new class called Bootstrapper.
Okay. In the web application, of course.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is wherever you put your Bootstrapper, mm-hmm. no matter what type of application you're using, you want this class to be easily callable from unit test harnesses or other code. So typically like it in some kind of just assembly DLL. And the reason I say this is you may want to exercise the container setup mm-hmm. in unit test scenarios, integration test scenarios, just other places besides running the application.
Makes sense. So are you thinking a new project here, like a setup or something?
No. No, just put it in your web project for now.
Okay. All right.
And besides, it's just nice to kind of keep this all in one place. So we do need to using, just like you're doing.
All right. So let's see. Yeah, I don't even know where to get started. So what do I do next?
Okay, this is the part I'm going to see if I can request control.
Sure, certainly. Don't go reading my email. It's all about you.
Okay. So can I send a nasty email from you to Bill Gates?
Or? Oh, I do. All right, he's got plenty of those from me.
All right. That I worked, past life, I worked at Dell, and that was a popular practical joke was to write a nasty email from you to Michael Dell if you left your box unlocked.
Oh, what do they call it again? Goading or something like that? Yeah, jeez.
Well, it teaches you. What's the name of your app? I guess Storefront,
yeah.
Right? I got in trouble a little bit. You don't have to do this, but... Oh, and sorry, Rob, I'm very used to Resharper. And Resharper wasn't here to do things for me. So you don't have to do this, but it's helpful if you create a separate registry class. It's a structure map specific class to put all your registry stuff in here. It just makes the it makes some of the Fluent DSL read a little better. So Bootstrapper here, I'm going to go ahead and make it static. I mean, all it does is give you a way to say start my container.
Yep.
And matter of fact, let me change this. I'm debating whether or not I'm going to make a super class for this in the 2.5 release, but my experience is it's very application specific, so probably not. So I'll call it something configure structure map, maybe Bootstrap instead, kind of whatever floats your boat, I guess. The reason we want to separate the Bootstrapper, in a lot of testing scenarios, I'm going to maybe I'll be doing subcutaneous testing. I'm going to throw the view layer of my application away, but I'm going to create all the controllers, the presenters, the services, the repositories in the back end, and I'm going to run tests against it. Or I'm going to, even if you're just creating your own little harnesses, I want to use part of the application but not all of it. I need to set up the container to get some pieces put together, but I'm certainly not running the whole application that would kick off the global ASAX. So even in that scenario, or in a real-life scenario, you simply delegate. We're simply going to have the global ASAX delegate to our Bootstrapper. But I want to be able to use my Bootstrapper independently of global ASAX. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. So in configure structure map, I could have made everything just structure map configuration calls here, but just to kind of show this off, if your application has any hope of becoming larger, put the configuration in registry classes, and then I just said read in this one. So I'll typically have I'll have one registry for my services, or typically I have a registry per assembly. You don't have to do, but okay. So, and inside of here, I'm going to override the configure method. The main reason to use the registry is it will make the Fluent interface read a little better. So, let's talk about our first type of service. So for requested type, let's look at our shopping cart. Okay, so we need to configure, let's configure iShopping cart service first.
So I've taken over for Jeremy here because the connection speed is a little bit too slow. So after we ask for a request, or we get a request for a type of iShopping cart service, and what we're gonna do now is what again?
Okay, so what is the default iShopping cart service going to be? The very simplest solution is say the default is concrete type. Whatever it is, it's at the bottom of your IntelliSense. There we go. And it's all driven by generics. Part of the idea is, you know, in the old days this was all XML and it was very easy to screw up names. This way you have a lot less chance of making mistakes. Then you could also do it, you still can do it with direct all of this with attributes, but then your IOC configuration is scattered all over your application code. And it's very hard to see what is it doing.
Not a big fan.
That's why I recommend doing it this way, because we can shrink all the configuration down to one place, so you can scan this registry class and see, that's how I'm set up.
I like it.
Okay. So you have shopping cart service, but shopping cart service itself has a dependency on your repository, correct?
That is right.
Okay, so let's do the same thing for your repository.
So do I just end this statement here, or do I keep going with the Fluent stuff?
Nope. Let's go to a new statement.
Okay, so we could just do the same thing, which would be I shopping cart repository, and then we say the default is type SQL shopping. There we go. Hey, this ain't.
Okay, let's do one more thing. Let's do one more thing here. So your repository is almost always going to be a singleton, correct?
Sure.
Okay, well, let's just pretend it is. So one more statement. After the default is concrete type, we need a direct structure map to let it know that I want it to be a singleton.
Okay.
So there should be a shortcut that says use singletons.
It's
my line. Here,
sure.
May I? Okay. Do I still
have it? Oh, here it is, as singletons.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. And then just close this off. So here's another reason to use an inversion of control containers, something very valuable that it will get you. You're going to have things in your application that need to be singletons. You're going to have things in your application, things like in-hibernate sessions or other things that need to be scoped at either like the HTTP context level. Within Hibernate, I would be scoping this at the HTTP context level, so that every time you ask for a in Hibernate session, you're getting the same session within the same HTTP context.
So when you're talking singleton, though, this is an interesting thing. I mean, how are we gonna work with this? Is the implementation SQL shopping cart repository? How are we gonna work with a link to SQL context here, if it's a singleton?
Okay, so in this case, I would probably make the DB be be injected.
I like.
Okay, so with respect to the data context, we probably, for a lot of reasons, we probably want to share the exact same data context within the same user request, or let's say that it's HTTP context.
So you're saying, I just want to make sure I understand, that we're talking about the SQL shopping cart repository, and you know what I have up here is this dependency, obviously, on the data context. And what you're saying is I can inject this data context, and not only can I inject it, but I can control the caching and lifetime of it. Is that right?
Yes, and that's one of the main use cases for an IOC tool, is to let the IOC tool handle this, so your shopping cart repository doesn't have to worry about it.
That's awesome. Wow, I'm digging this. Okay, so how do I do that?
Okay, so let's do the same for requested type DB.
All right, let me just add a using statement up here. I'm going to add it. There we go.
Okay.
And DB is obviously the name of my context there, as you can see by the IntelliSense. Okay. And then
open close prints. And because it's a concrete class, no constructor arguments, structure map can kind of look at it and see, I know how to build this. Yep. I don't need any further help. So when I ask for a DB, I'm going to get a DB.
Nice.
That's it. The only thing we really have to do here is set up the life cycle or the caching.
Okay.
So dot cache by.
Wow. Okay.
And it takes in an ugly attribute, instance scope.
Okay.
If you hit dot, maybe stop here.
Sure.
So here are the choices that come out of the box. Mm-hmm. Sometime in the next couple of weeks, I'll write a blog post about how to write all new ones and plug them in. But we can do this by HTTP context, where it'll actually try to cache it in the HTTP context.items. Per request, what Windsor calls transient, every time I ask for a DB, it'll give me a completely new one every single time. Singleton, behind the scenes, any time it's either injecting the DB into a registry or you're asking for a DB explicitly, regardless, it's going to be using the same one.
Wow.
So this scoping applies everywhere where you try to assemble it, get it, push it in. So the HTTP context, it does work. The problem with it is that it... Now this code can only work if there is an ASP.NET session going. What Hybrid does instead, Hybrid does kind of a fall-through model. It tries to use HTTP context if there is one. Otherwise, it just does thread local. So using Hybrid instead, it basically allows this code to be used in unit testing, acceptance testing scenarios, or scenarios where it's not running inside the ASP.NET runtime.
Okay, well, that's very cool. Okay, so we're going to use Hybrid, and anything else we need to do?
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
Semicolon. Okay, so we've established iShopping cart repository, and now to get back to the original controller, we have to define everything that's there. So we do need to specify the service. There was one service that took in an iShopping. Mm-hmm. Okay, iShopping cart service. Okay, can we go look at the real shopping cart service?
Sure. Let's see, where is it here? Here we go.
All right, so let's look at its constructor. Mm-hmm. It takes in an iShopping cart repository. Okay, and it only has one constructor, so we know what it's going to use here. So we'll go back in. But there's an important point there. Mm-hmm. You notice that an iShopping cart service, shopping cart service still needs the mm-hmm. repository, but we don't define it here. StructureMap does something, has a feature called auto wiring. All the IOC tools will do this. So if you don't mm-hmm. tell it what repository to use, it's going to use the default one. If for some reason, I'm going to have to request control. The easiest thing to do is mm-hmm. you're going to let the auto wiring just do its work the mass majority of times. But sometimes, I'm just going to go ahead and write another statement that I'll delete in a second. Let's say for some reason that we don't want to do that.
Okay.
That we want to use a different one instead. Let's see, so the default is... Okay, so now we're going to get into inline configuration. So I'm going to say it's still an instance of shopping cart service, the shopping cart service class. If you're a user of StructureMap 2.0, this did change a little bit. It's still backwards compatible, and I promise to document it. I swear. So let's say that the child... for iShopping cart repository. And the point being here that instead of letting you use the default,
I can say... So you're sort of doing
something else.
Go ahead.
You're not going to use this very often, but it's there when you do need it.
With respect to moving forward so I can actually hit run and have this work, the catalog repository is the first one that's called, and the catalog controller and all that stuff. How do we kickstart this now so we can test drive it, click on go, and see it happen?
Okay, so... The next step is, we put all the stuff in the Bootstrapper, but somebody has to tell the Bootstrapper to go.
Mm-hmm.
So for a web application, that's most likely global ASAX.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, right there.
Boom.
Yeah. If I was doing this in a, if this was a desktop client,
mm-hmm.
I generally put this in the main executable.
Mm-hmm.
So the main executable would call this Bootstrapper thing, and I generally have the Bootstrapper go ahead and create the main shell
mm-hmm.
and then return the main shell, and then you would go, application.run, here's the shell, and go on. And that's the only thing that would show up in that construct.
Okay, so I've added in all the types here, and the types I'm going to be needing, at least for right now. I'll probably add a few more before I get done. So Jeremy... before I get going here, I know this sort of started to look to me like routing does, at least in the way that we're declaring, you know, this, you know, when you see this, do this or have this or return this, whatever. And I know with routing that there's sort of this order of precedence deal. Is there an order? Can I declare a cart service before I declare the things that go into it? Or is there an order of precedence I need to do this in?
No, there's not. The only thing you need to worry about is, you know, right now we're just saying that for every plug-in type of an I something, there's a default of something. But you can also create named instances. So I could create a shopping cart service for North America. I could do one for EMEA. But you could be stepping over yourself if you configured two different instances for North America.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, the last one would win. You know, my advice is just try to avoid those situations. But in really big systems, that kind of stuff will happen.
Next thing I need to do is register a controller factory that overrides the current or the default controller factory. And for those of you who haven't seen, Phil Hack has a great post on this, which is TDD and dependency injection with MVC. And it's a nice long post. He goes into a little bit of TDD. But at the very end, Jeremy, I don't know if you've read this post, but he shows, oh no, what do I do? You know, the test won't run and won't pass, but he shows how to take structure map right here and then download it and set it up. He uses the config stuff. He doesn't use the DSL like we just did, but he shows how to set it up and use it, including some code for a controller factory, which is kind of cool. And that's what I'm going to be using right now. So to do that, I'm going to add in a new item, and then I'm going to call this a structure map. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm going to come in here and add a new MVC controller class. No, I'm not. I'm going to make it just be a regular class. Structure map, controller, factory, inheriting from default. Oops, not there. I got to put in a using statement. System.web.mvc. And then there it is, default controller factory. Okay. So in this case, the way that we're going to implement this is pretty straightforward. And we're just simply going to override the get controller instance, and we're going to pass in the type. And then what we're going to do here is use structure map to return the type of controller that we want. All right, and so in this case, all we need to do right here is we just need to say return object, object, where did it go? Factory. Thank you. And then say get named instance, is that right?
Oh, no, just get instance. Named instance is that case of, do I want to get to one that's called North America or the one for Europe or whatever the case may be.
Do you have to cast it because I'm returning an iComController. Yeah.
Oh, because the iController.
Yeah. Well, this should work out pretty well. So what this is going to do, Jeremy, why don't you walk me through it? The object factory is what we've wired up in the Bootstrapper, right? And we've kind of configured everything. The object factory does what now?
Okay. Object factory, it's just a big facade. Tons of other things behind the scenes. So object factory, I want to say, give me a something of this type. And for the controller, if we go back to Bootstrapper, you'll see that there's nowhere in here that we said anything
That's
about
right.
how to build any of the controllers up. You're going to request, look at it for controller. The first time that you request a certain type of controller, it's going to see it's a concrete type, so let's keep going. I don't know about it now, but I'm going to create a whole new infrastructure behind the scenes to create it. Now I'm going to look at catalog controller. I'm going to look at its greediest constructor. So I'm going to see that internally, StructureMap is saying, I need to stick in a catalog repository. But I do know how to build the default catalog repository. So I build a catalog repository, but first I build the data context and stick it in. So it operates in the logical order all the way down. So, you know, as it discovers that, this guy needs those guys needs this third group of guys, and it puts all of that together and returns catalog controller back to you with all of the dependencies pushed in all the way down. So it has a repository. The repository has a data context. If you were using other services, it would have the services. Those services would have their own things. At the same time, you know, if this is the first time you needed one of those DB objects within the HP context, mm-hmm. it's creating it brand new, and it's also storing it off in the HP context current items.
For those of you who have been watching this up to this point and are like, come on already, I just want to recap and say we've done three things. Four, actually. We've added a reference to structure map. That's thing one. Thing two, we created this thing called a bootstrapper. And as you can see, it's pretty simple stuff. We've registered what all of our interfaces are and, you know, got to just say return this type. We're basically telling structure map what to do when it encounters these. And then the final thing that we've done, actually I guess it's more or less the third thing, is we've created a new controller factory, one line of code, simple enough, and then we're asking structure map to work is essentially the deal here. And then the fourth and final thing that we need to do, phew, is pretty simple. All we need to do is override the controller builder and then current, and we just need to say set controller factory, and this one is going to be, can you guess at home? It's going to be the structure map. Oops, I gotta put in commerce.mvc.web.controllers.structureMapController factory. And I think I might have to new that up. Yes, I do. Because I'm not passing in a type. Nope. All right, and that's it. Jeremy, do you see anything wrong with what I've done?
No, looks good from here.
Okay, well, I've kind of refactored everything. I've set everything up. About to build the site here. Ran into a little bit of a snag. If you notice the build, we have a non-reference assembly, system.data.link. Normally, I wouldn't mind adding that reference, but it's one of those things. And that reference that's coming by because the class here is from my link to SQL repository. Trying to kind of push the data context into this caching lifetime management thing. And I'm sitting here kind of scratching my head a little bit. I don't really want that assembly in here, but I guess I don't really care. Or do I care, Jeremy? What do you think?
Well, let's say you do care. Lots of reasons to care. A lot of people are using static code analysis to enforce this type of thing. And so I'll show you real quick way to get around this. Gonna switch control over.
You drive.
Okay, so what we could do is all of these services, the registries, the things that are really kind of back-end services that aren't necessarily part of the UI, go back and create a whole new registry class in your data project here, which I won't do. I'm just gonna tell you to do it. This line of code here, the add registry, just add another one. Add another one that is data registry or service registry, and break your structure map configuration in the modules a little bit, and that'll kind of help solve that problem, or at least.
Okay, so to get that to work, all we'd have to do is add a structure map reference here to our data class, and then we have inside it. Well, it's called a bootstrapper. Would that be a fair thing to call it inside the data class?
Well, I think I would ask you to call it something registry.
So like data, let's say DB registry, for lack of better words. And then inside there, all we do is we define that, essentially, right?
Yeah, in the same, override the same configure class and add all this stuff in. Or move everything that's related to data access over there. And it also has the advantage of, now you can take that assembly by itself. Maybe you want to throw away the website later and put all this functionality behind a SOAP web service. So now you can take your structure map configuration for only this piece, and it's perfectly usable without changing this code. You just put a different, totally different outside interface.
Okay. Well, so let's do it. Why not? So what should I call this thing? If you.
Oh, I would call it service registry. I mean, your repositories, your services, it's all your service layer stuff.
service registry, and we're going to be using, this is a pretty handy trick.
And it needs to inherit from a class called registry that I believe is its structure map, structure map.configuration.dsl.registry.
That is it, yep. All right, so structure map. Configuration.dsl. There we are. And so registry. And I'm going to add a line for this as well. All right. And so in here, let's see, we are going to, for the bootstrapper, let's just take that out.
Before you do anything else, just override the configure method.
Oh, right. Thank you. All right. And then we remove the base, correct?
Mm-hmm. Base.configure does nothing.
And so we're saying for requested type, configuration DSL, DB, and let's see, we're going to say...
Now, we're using this, the multiple registries here, just to make things a little bit simpler between the layers. Mm-hmm. But if you had a modular application where one team's working on one assembly that has a full part of the stack and others, this is kind of how you could start to go about making a modular application, where you could add new pieces of the application on the mm-hmm. fly. You could move this stuff out to XML. You could. The great thing about an embedded or an internal DSL like mm-hmm. this, it's all C sharp mm-hmm. stuff. You could be reading a flat file, picking up assembly names, and doing whatever you want and intermixing it with the structure map DSL.
I have to say, when I first read Phil's post here, and you know, we got down to how to set up structure map, and I saw that XML, I was like, no, for some reason.
Yeah.
It's just
that's the sure. old we didn't yeah. know better yeah. way. Even the XML itself, the structure map XML today, you can also it's much more mm-hmm. concise than what that's shown. That's a matter of me needing to redo my documentation.
Yeah, no worries on that one. Well, let me ask you this. So now in the bootstrapper here, we're asking for a new service registry. It's a little bit vague for me. I just kind of want to see what your opinion is, because we're specifically talking about our data access bits. Is it better to just say data okay. service registry, or what do you think?
If you think that's a better, if that name's more clear to you,
well, I'm thinking, right. you know, just if someday we might add a registry here to the actual services class, it just seems a little confusing. Tell you what, I'm just going to call this DB service registry. How does that sound to you? Am I running with scissors?
Sounds fine to me. No.
All right. Okay, well, good. I've got a little bit of Visual Studio refactoring going there. All right, so it looks like I have. Okay, I'm going to start up the store here, and this is exciting, and nothing's exploded yet, yep, and there it is, look, boots work, and it's actually kind of fast too, this is good stuff, alright, it's working, and add items to the cart, there we go, adding an item to the cart, that works, we are DI'd, that's exciting stuff. Okay, everything's working nicely now with a structure map implemented. Very excited about that. But I have one little bit of ugliness that I don't like, and that is my user session controller, which is a component controller here that I'm using to output the shopper cart information, and which is this information up here at the top. So as you can see, what I have here is a very tight dependency. In fact, I even have to create the link to SQL stuff, which obviously is not a good idea. Now, the problem I'm having here is that there's no factory that I can kind of inject structure map into the process of. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, if we take a look down here to the shopping cart controller that I created, let's see, where is it? Controller? Excuse me, I created a structure map controller factory. And what I've done is I've overridden here the get controller instance. I've overridden it, and I'm asking structure map to get the instance for me. So this is how you get structure map in the loop in order to handle the mapping. You have to ask the object factory to create it for you. So in this sense, every controller that I make now is subject to structure map's magic. So the problem now, though, comes in with the user session controller in that I don't have a factory that builds out these components. It's just an HTML override. Now, this is something I created a while back with the MVC toolkit, and I actually am in the space to change it, which is nice. So just know that future drops, I'm going to send some code off to Phil and team, and hopefully they'll put it in there. But what I need to do right now is to make this injectable. So that is not exactly an easy task. First thing I'm going to want to do, though, is to take a look at how it's implemented. In other words, how does this component get implemented on the page? And so if you come over here and take a look at the site master, you can see right there that that is how we output it. It's by the use of the HTML helper render component method. We pass in the type, and then we pass in an expression here that tells it which method we want to use. So if I open up Reflector and take a look at what's going on in the code there, and I'm okay doing that. It's my code, after all. You can see here that the render component method, let me move this over so we can see it. The render component does a little bit of light reflection, uses activator create instance, which is not all that bad. Does some magic in there and invokes the method and returns the rendered HTML. And so I'm going to want to do the same thing. What I'm going to do instead, though, is instead of using activator create instance, as you see up here, I'm going to say object factory get me an instance. And that is going to be the little bit of magic that is going to tie up everything to my dependency injection. So in order to do this, we have to first stop the site. I have to go over to the user session controller, and I have to set it up in such a way that I can inject the dependencies that I need. Let's do that. One of the best things about using dependency injection here is that you can see you lose a lot of code. It's kind of nice. So this is all I need to do in order to make this injectable, which is, I guess, a new word that I'm using. I created an overload here for the constructor, passing in the services that I need to use to make this thing work, and hopefully going to let StructureMap do the rest. The next thing I need to do is to add my own helper method, one that I don't need to rely on the core framework. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to create in my app helper, which I'm sure I'm going to refactor this out into view extensions, but for right now I'm just going to stick it in here. I'm going to add a new method called render mapped component. So I'm going to do that real quick. Okay, I can just tell you that this is all the exact same code that is in the framework, except for one thing here, which is now I'm asking StructureMap, the object factory, to create the instance for me. When it does that, it's going to read this constructor right here. By default, it looks for the constructor with the longest argument list, and it says, okay, let's see if we can stitch this together. And since it knows what the iUser service is and the iShopping cart service, we are good to go. It is that simple. It's very exciting. And so I call this render mapped component. Now the final step of the battle here is I just need to come over here, and instead of saying render component, I'm going to say render mapped component. I have left the signature exactly the same. So now what I should be able to do is run this site, hopefully no errors, and there's none. And we sit and say please, please, please. And there it is. Well, that's very exciting. I have cleaned this code up a ton. I can't thank Jeremy Miller enough. Everything works the way it should, and we're good to go.